Yanks and Krauts genau.
What's genau?
Genau means exactly.
Oh, genau.
Genau. Can I tell you a story that really moved my old home country this week? It is that the German national soccer team has only ever had one outfitter since Second World War, the Adidas company from the Franconian town of Herzogenaurach in the German state of Bavaria, together with Italy. Germany is a, Austin, four-time world champion. Did you know that?
No,
you're not a soccer fan, right?
Well, no, I would ask you to translate what you just said, but I think it was English already. So is this like a revolution in soccer outfitting?
I mean,
like German soccer, what do they say?
It's important. I mean, it's over 70 years.
70 years. 70 only Adidas. Wearing the stripes.
Only the stripes.
Wow.
Yeah. And I just wanted to just squeeze in one information that is also important, because you obviously don't know much about soccer, that Brazil has won the World Cup 5 times.
Now, was Pele on one of those teams?
Yeah.
See, I know.
Yeah.
I know about Pele.
In the 60s. And when a German shows you four fingers on the street, that means, hey, buddy, we are proud. We won the World Cup 4 times.
It doesn't mean
no.
I'm hailing a cab.
No.
Okay.
No,
it means four.
Four, man. And all that's right. Why the German team and all the other soccer teams have stars on their chest, on their shirt. And the number of stars tells you how many World Cups they won.
So what's happening here? They're explain this to me. They're dropping Adidas.
They're dropping Adidas after 70 years. Adidas was founded in 1949, a small town outside of Nuremberg in southeast Germany, state of Bavaria, as I said before. And the same year, it registered its now iconic three-stripe logo and now an American company.
Wait, before you do that, what was the name of the Adidas town?
Herzogenaurach.
Say that again.
Herzogenaurach.
Okay.
And there's one more story. So the name Adidas comes from its founder, Adi Dassler.
That's interesting.
Adi Dassler and his brother.
Adi.
His brother in the same town said, I want to start a similar company. Guess what? What did he start? Puma. Right.
I would not have guessed that. I always thought Puma was like South American, like
no,
it had something
no.
to do with Pumas.
They're in the same town. It's totally crazy, and Herzogenaurach is not really a big town.
I thought Puma was like the South American word for mountain lion.
No. Yeah, it is. It is. It's their logo. It's but yeah, there were brothers and they split up, and so he started Puma. And now an American company is taking over for the German Football Federation. They will be kitting out the German national soccer team from 2027 until 2034.
Who's that?
Nike.
Just do it.
The Americans took over the German national soccer team. It's crazy. Nike means, by the way, victory in Greek.
That is supposedly the one word uttered by a runner who announced the victory after the Battle of Marathon. Greek battle many years ago. Supposedly, he ran 26 miles, marathon, and dropped dead after he said the one word, Nike. So, how are German fans going to take this change?
I mean, it is, I think, a big deal. Even the German economy minister, Robert Habeck, told a local news agency that he could hardly imagine the prospect. And DFB's announcement, DFB, that's the German Football Soccer Association, comes at, to be honest, bad times for Adidas, which last week posted a net loss of 58 million euros or $36 million in its core business for 2023, citing a slowdown in sales and a large tax burden. So it doesn't look good for Adidas right now. And, you know, that news on top was really super, super bad news.
So, you know, Marcus, I'm really glad you brought me up to date on the Nike, Adidas,
important
and German
news.
Soccer news. I was losing sleep over this. I was like, oh my God, what is happening in German soccer? I cannot rest. So now the news we usually do, I think there's too much going on for us to really cover everything this week.
By the time you are hearing this podcast, New York prosecutor Letitia James is probably already in the process of seizing Donald Trump's possessions in New York.
Let's not forget that the former President Trump was found responsible for tax and banking fraud in New York. He would lie that his property was worth very little when he had to pay taxes, and then he would lie that it was worth a lot when he was trying to get a bank loan. Now we will find out how much his property is actually worth if the courts or he has to start selling it. Anyway, he's trying to come up with nearly $500 million. I'm hearing that correctly, right? That's
$500 million. $450 something and plus interest
accruing every day. Yeah, close so to $500 million. He's got to come up with that like this weekend, mm-hmm. unless he has some other trick. And this week he has said both. His lawyers said at one time just a few days ago that there was no way he had this kind of cash. And then I think yesterday or the day before he was bragging about how he had that kind of cash. So we're going to find out soon.
And guess what? One of them is lying. Either the lawyers, which I honestly doubt.
Because they want to keep their law licenses.
But Austin, however, Trump, he might be lucky again. In recent weeks, his supporters have artificially boosted the share price of his Truth Social network, which is actually performing poorly. Despite the platform's low user base and revenue, it's expected to debut on the stock market sometime this week with a, hold your breath, valuation of around $5 billion.
First of all, Pravda Social, I mean Truth Social, is probably overvalued. Currently, as per the market, Trump's got a 60% stake in Pravda, Truth, and it's worth about $3 billion, depending on how the stock trades. The stock's ticker will become DJT, Trump's initials. He puts his name on everything. When Truth Social starts officially trading as a new public company under its parent's name, Trump Media and Technology Group, or Pravda Social for short.
And it remains uncertain whether this windfall would alleviate his current situation. In order to sell shares or leverage them within the next 6 months, he would require a waiver from either the executives overseeing the shell company orchestrating Truth Social's public debut or the newly formed board of Truth Social, or as you call it, Pravda, which includes one of his sons and former members of his cabinet. Despite their support for Trump, granting such a waiver could potentially prompt other investors to divest their shares, thereby impacting the stock price.
Does that include the court-appointed overseer? I think the court put someone in there to like keep track of the money to make sure it wasn't disappearing before things were settled.
But it's for the Trump companies based in New York, and I'm not sure. I don't think that this company is based in New York.
Oh, interesting.
I think it was founded somewhere else.
Guys just got all kinds of tricks.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so the problem with stocks, people get upset when their stocks crash, but they're always a gamble. I mean, it amazes me how people just, you know, forget that. If an airline's doors fall off in mid-flight, the airline stocks might fall with them. If the former president says something stupid, I can't imagine that happening, but if he says something stupid, people might dump their Pravda stocks and there may be some other restrictions, right?
And yes, there are restrictions on how many shares, for example, he is allowed to sell. This means that he will not be able to sell his entire package of $3 billion in one go. This is a 3-month period. It also depends on factors such as the weekly trading volume at Wall Street or the total number of shares outstanding.
You know, he doesn't want to lose his 51% and lose control of this company. At least I don't see that. Anyway, he could possibly just use his shares as a surety, as a guarantee against a loan from somebody else. I'm not sure how that would work.
That would be hard to get a bond company, for example, to give him that money in return.
Oh, I'm because thinking about like a Saudi prince or a Russian.
But the stock crypto market and especially such stocks coming from having a SPAC background, these stocks are super volatile. So he must get a lot less money for the stocks he has to give to that company.
Okay, so tell me more. What else do we know?
I mean, securing the waiver would undoubtedly benefit Trump. especially as he lags behind President Biden's campaign in terms of fundraising ahead of their upcoming presidential rematch. And additionally, this deal could inject much-needed capital into Truth Social, revitalizing the platform and bolstering its ability to attract both users and advertisers in an increasingly competitive social media landscape. But there's another interesting question, Austin. Although Trump is so far well behind Biden in fundraising for his campaign, it remains uncertain whether he intends to invest any of his personal wealth in his campaign. In the election 2016, Trump poured $66 million into his own campaign, but in 2020 election, in that election, he has largely refrained from self-funding.
Well, yeah, I want to remind people that when he ran in 2016, he claimed that he would not owe anybody any favors. He was going to fund everything himself. There's a famous quote where he says, I'm rich. I'm really, really rich. I wish I could do a Trump voice. I'm really, really, really rich. He's richer than all the tea in China. And China. Anyway, so he claimed to be really rich and that he would completely self-fund. So it's funny when you say he poured $66 million in. Was it $66 million? When he says when he claims to have poured $66 million, I don't really see it as pouring. I think it became clear that, at the time he wasn't raising the money he wanted to raise. So, but he did say he was so rich he couldn't be bought. Now it looks like he's definitely getting bought. He's raising more money through this. There's going to be an IPO on his company. He's going to probably make a lot of money in stock. And he may be able to sell some stock
In the next few weeks. And then we will probably see how the stocks of Truth Social will go down very dramatically.
Okay, so this isn't just on the sale of MAGA hats and MAGA merch.
In fact, it's very bad for the people who invested in that company because they all know he needs to sell stocks in order to pay the court in New York. And that on the long run will go down because this company is not a really good investment. Trump's political backers orchestrated an improbable success story with the merger, rallying on social media to purchase shares of the shell company, akin to the individual investors who boosted shares of GameStop during the pandemic. You remember that story?
I do.
And the soaring share price resulted in a substantial reward for Trump and other insiders involved in finalizing the deal, defying the skepticism of many Wall Street analysts who predicted a decline in stock value and the collapse of the merger. One concern for Trump is the potential for the stock to plummet post-deal, especially when it becomes evident that he might offload, as I just said, a substantial amount of shares. Similar meme stocks, that's how they're called, driven up by small investors, have experienced sharp declines after their steep rise in the past. Traders anticipate increased volatility as Truth Social now faces the challenge of justifying its lofty valuation. At its current price, at around $37 that we recorded on Saturday, that was the stock price on Friday, it stands to become one of the most successful so far.
So, and now do I have any reason to not believe that Truth Social has been just kicking financial butt, right? They're just an amazing company.
They're not, Austin. Truth Social has reported...
They don't make billions of dollars?
No, the opposite is the case. So Truth Social has reported about $5 million in revenue. That's like nothing.
I was going to say nothing for it's supposedly like, $1-2-3 billion company.
I would call it peanuts. And losses in tens of millions since its inception. There's talk of a loss of around $40 million. That's what I read in the Wall Street Journal. The network is basically nothing more than a bad copycat of Twitter.
Right.
It only lives from the fact that Donald Trump is active there, and investors are now hoping that Truth Social could use Trump's popularity to compete with Facebook and X, formerly known as Twitter.
So typical to Trump, he's trying to brand off his name. it sounds like this company is a net loser so far.
It is, and it will be. It's that, you know,
a net loser in like $35 million net loser so far.
Yes, absolutely. Because the network is, the design is very poorly done. There is not a big user base that will attract a lot of marketing people. So they really can compete with companies like Meta, TikTok, Blue Sky, or X, because they are simply so strong and so big compared to Truth Social. Truth Social only reaches a very specific spectrum of Trump fans. This group is not very attractive for the advertising industry, for the marketing people.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, where do these people shop? It's MyPillow all over again? Or,
for example?
I mean, the so-called coastal elites that everybody loves to hate, they're the ones who buy all that middle-class stuff.
Certain beer brands.
Okay. Okay. Not that light beer from Budweiser.
Definitely not.
All right. Okay. So, hey, Peter Navarro went to jail this week.
Oh, this is this news or an editorial?
I got something to say about something that has been bugging me. I don't know if you saw his little press conference before he went to jail.
Austin, I saw it and I thought, this is like, is that a little baby? But yeah, take it along.
Yeah, so Peter Navarro, former Trump chief trade advisor, reported to prison this Tuesday for 4 months. He avoided the 2 years the prosecution wanted to give him. He did say at some point that the 2 years would amount to a quarter of his life, given that he's already 74 years old. And when I heard this, I felt so sad. Now, I'm being ironic. I thought, what a whiny guy. Anyway, so whenever I see these guys, you know, they get a search warrant served or they get arrested or they're arraigned or they're convicted, I just see them whining. You know, I think about how lucky they are to live in a two-tiered justice system where rich people, especially white guys, get breaks. And these guys act like tough guys until they get caught. There are two sayings. I think I mentioned this before. There are two things we say, you know, well, there are a lot of things we say, but I remember these two. One is, a conservative is a liberal that hasn't been mugged yet. This means after they get mugged, even liberals become conservatives. The other side of that saying is, the corollary is, a liberal is a conservative that hasn't been arrested yet. And I just heard that one recently, and I thought, how insightful. This means when they finally get arrested for all the crimes they used to get away with, they want all the rights, all the legal tricks, all the lawyers, all the delays, all the appeals they can get, and more. And if you're Donald Trump, you want your campaign donors to pay for it with their mom and pop small dollar donations. You know, during Trump rallies, you remember when people were chanting, lock her up?
I do.
Lock her up, lock her up. Trumpers were chanting lock her up about Hillary Clinton, a former senator, secretary of state, advocate for healthcare. People like General Flynn, you remember that guy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And his son.
Didn't he end up going to jail or something?
I don't remember.
I think he actually did some jail time. I think Trump kicked him and gave him a pardon.
He had to go, I think, in the first days of his presidency already, because he was talking to a foreign government, Russian.
Exactly. And the previous administration, the Obama administration, tried to warn the Trump administration about this guy, that he was a little untrustworthy. He was talking to, you know, foreign potential adversaries. Anyway,
been interested a couple of times to Moscow, dined with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, so Flynn admitted he was guilty of communicating with Russian spy ambassador Sergei Kislyak. We talked about him once before, the Sergeys meeting with the president, the same guy who had that private meeting with Trump with no Americans in the room, not even an American interpreter. I think the meeting was about getting Trump elected, I think, if I remember correctly, or I don't know if that ever got confirmed. So I'm watching this and, you know, Navarro and whining about going to jail for 4 months. And I'm thinking about, you know, Flynn and these guys chanting lock her up and how tough they all act. And I'll tell you where my head goes. It goes back to 1989 when I started teaching in Los Angeles. And this is why it goes back to that time. So incidentally, all my students were Black and Latino. And they were all teenagers. They were middle school and ninth graders. That same year in New York, five black and Latino boys were arrested for raping and beating a white woman who was jogging in Central Park.
Of course I hate these people. And let's all hate these people, because maybe hate is what we need if we're going to get something done.
We were 14, 15, and 16-year-old children. And they looked at us and said, well, they did it. Let's just do this. Pat Buchanan wrote in the papers a while later, a short while later, he writes, well, why don't we just take the eldest one and hang him from a tree in Central Park? And to be introduced to what I now call the American nightmare, when all I wanted was the American dream. All I wanted was to dream with my eyes wide open, get up and ride my skateboard and, you know, enjoy the same park, be a child, all of that was taken from us. To me, it reminds me that miracles are still happening, that a story that made people the scum of the earth, that buried us alive, made us into seeds. But not just us, the five, it made us as a people, because when they saw us, they looked at the color of our skin and they judged us by it. And here we are 34 years later. And I couldn't help but think about what Dr. King said, the arc of the moral universe. Here we are 34 years later, and the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice.
And it was known at the time as the Central Park Jogger case or the Central Park Five case. So that poor woman, you know, she was 28 years old. She was beaten so badly. And she was, she was in a coma. She was put into a coma. She was left for dead. When she awoke, she had no memory of what happened. She wasn't really able to provide any information in her case at all. Five boys were arrested. And when I say boys, I really mean children. They were 14, 15, or 16 years old. They were put into the jail system where they were interviewed over, I think it was the 24 hours or something. It was a fairly long interview process. Really, in retrospect, they were brainwashed. They were tricked. They were exhausted, threatened into giving confessions. They were put one after the other. They were all told that the other guys had blamed them. And they eventually got confessions out of all of them. After their initial confessions, the boys consistently pled, and by the way, no lawyers. So once they got lawyers and after the initial confessions and the arraignment, they consistently pled their innocence. At every turn, they were clear that they were innocent. They had, okay. So anyway, they were convicted. These five young men were convicted. The attack occurred on April 19th of 1989, 11 days later, on May 1st, real estate operator Donald Trump published a full-page ad in New York's Newsday newspaper, and the headline was, "Bring Back the Death Penalty." I'm just going to read from this. And I'll probably read too much, but think about this in the context of Trump and his people now. And I edited for shortness, but I'm reading darn near half this article that he published. What has happened to our city? What has happened to the respect for authority, the fear of retribution by the courts, society, and the police? Many New York families have had to give up the pleasure of a leisurely stroll in the park at dusk, the Sunday visit to the playground. They had to give them up as hostages to a world ruled by the law of the streets, as roving bands of wild criminals roam our neighborhoods, dispensing their own vicious brand of twisted hatred on whomever they encounter. To the reckless and dangerously permissive atmosphere, which allows criminals of every age to beat and rape a helpless woman. Mayor Koch, and this is Trump talking still, Mayor Koch has stated that hate and rancor should be removed from our hearts. And then Trump says, I do not think so. I want to hate these muggers and murderers. They should be forced to suffer, and when they kill, they should be executed for their crimes. We must cease our continuous pandering to the criminal population. bring back the death penalty. So that's what Trump paid his own money to put into the newspaper.
That sounds very familiar.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like what I hear from Trump and his people today. So Trump called for executing these five boys less than 2 weeks after their arrest, before they'd had a trial even. Also, in his advertisement, he fondly recalled the day when the police just beat people up to keep them in order. Later on, another man, a guy named Matias Reyes, admitted committing the attack on the woman in Central Park. He was also convicted of other attacks. His DNA matched the DNA found at the crime scene and on the victim. So anyway, no crime scene was found at the crime linking these boys to the crime. None of the DNA matched them. They were wrongfully convicted. I'll read their names, actually. Kevin Richardson, who was 14 when he was wrongfully accused, served 5.5 years for a crime he did not commit, and Trump called for his execution. Raymond Santana, who was 14 when he was wrongfully accused, served 5 years for a crime he did not commit, and Trump called for his execution. Anton McCray, who was 15 when he was wrongfully accused, served 5.5 years for the crime he did not commit, and Trump called for his execution. Yusuf Salam, who was 15 when he was wrongfully accused, served 7 years for the crime he did not commit, and Trump called for his execution. Corey Wise, who was 16 and therefore tried as an adult, served 13 years and 4 months for the crime he did not commit in an adult prison, and Trump called for his execution. So I'm listening to Peter Navarro whining before going to jail for 4 months and thinking about convicted con artist Trump's Steve Bannon and Roger Stone, also convicted, and Russian operative Paul Manafort convicted. These last three guys all being pardoned by Donald Trump. And I'm wondering where the law and order actually is. And I know these enemies of the state all benefited from the two-tier justice system. And those guys who attacked and maimed, in some cases, the police and defecated in the United States Capitol, Trump calls them hostages and patriots, and Trump says he'll pardon them as well. You know, Navarro complained that being an old man, his time in jail was already taking too much of his life away. Candidate Trump never apologized to the five children who went to jail for years and for whose lives he called to end. This is the type of tough guy Trump and his people claim to be. Racist, unapologetic, hateful, whiny little.
I think that's it for this week's Yanks and Krauts. Stay well and use your heads.
Now, the last thing I want to say is that that's prison. That's where they take your freedom. But as hard as it will be on me and as hard as it will be on anybody who is in there, it's harder on their families. And this is who those Democrats have hurt. Navarro's going to prison today. I'm pissed. That's what I'm feeling right now. But I'm also afraid of only one thing. I'm afraid for this country, because this, what they're doing, should have a chilling effect on every American, regardless of their party. If they come for me, they can come for you.
Peter was treated very unfairly, a great patriot, a great negotiator for our country. He did a tremendous job with respect to China and trade, and they treated him very badly. The Biden administration treated him very, very badly. It's a shame, but that's the way it is. They treated him very, very badly.
Michael Flynn, General Flynn, is a wonderful man. I think he's been treated very, very unfairly by the media.
And I think Roger Stone was very unfairly treated, as were many people.
You've heard of Andrew Jackson. He was actually a great general and a very good president. They say that he was persecuted as president more than anybody else. Second was Abraham Lincoln. This is just what they said. This is in the history books. They were brutal. Andrew Jackson's wife actually died over it, they say. Died of a broken heart. But nobody comes close to Trump.
And I was always told that Andrew Jackson, as a president, was treated the absolute worst. And I heard Abraham Lincoln was second. I said, I don't care Andrew Jackson or anybody else. Nobody has, when you think of the fake things, nobody's been treated like Trump in terms of badly.
Nobody's been treated like Trump in terms of badly, and Trump should be treated in terms of goodly.
Yeah, he said, no president has been treated worse, yeah? Even John Wilkes Booth is like, hold on, I gotta stay, I gotta... Come on, bud, come on.